Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
The Supreme Court did not clear Donald Trump of insurrection. There's a headline you won't see, but should. I'm Jessica Denson, host of Lights On with Jessica Denson here on the Midas Touch Network, and we are about to be joined by the courageous team, two of them, who made history when they successfully litigated Trump's ban from the ballot in Colorado. They were just reversed by the Supreme Court in what I believe to be a stunning abdication of constitutional duty by those justices. But there's as much to glean in what the justices did not say as in what they did. And we're going to discuss all that right now. It's my absolute honor to be joined by Chief Counsel for Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, Donald Sherman, and one of the brave Republican plaintiffs in the landmark case, Krista Kafer. Krista and Donald, welcome to Lights On.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
So Donald, you've been with us so many times. It's been, I've got to say, such an honor to walk through the stages of this case with you back to the summer of 2023 before you even brought the case. We've had you on Lights On many times. I kind of want to just give the floor right off the bat to Krista, who we're just meeting today for the first time. Krista, before I get into the weeds, what is your reaction to today's ruling?
Well, obviously, I'm disappointed with the ruling, but I also want to say that I have absolutely no regrets, and I would do it again in a heartbeat. I would have liked for the court to have upheld our case, but I think, as you mentioned, it's important to note that they did uphold our finding, the finding of the court, and the finding that we have been pushing to be heard, and that is that Donald Trump did engage in insurrection. If he had not been pushing that lie for 2 months, none of those people would have been there on January 6th. None of those people would have attacked the Capitol and endangered our police. None of those people would have tried to stop the peaceful transfer of power. And the fact that the court did not take issue with that, I think, is a victory, albeit a small one.
I share that frustration with you, Krista, and I think with you, Donald, as well, albeit that victory is extremely significant. Donald, right off the top, what are your thoughts to this ruling?
Well, and, you know, as Krista said, disappointment, but I'll also say here gratitude for Krista and her co-plaintiffs. People seem to take for granted just how significant an undertaking it is to for regular citizens to enforce the Constitution against the former president of the United States, a responsibility that's been abdicated by senators, by courts, except for the Colorado courts, and the U.S. Supreme Court. And so, you know, it's no small feat what Krista and her co-plaintiffs were able to do. But also, I think the thing that is important to remember is, as Krista said, the court ruled in former President Trump's favor on a technicality, finding that states don't have authority to enforce Section 3 of the 14th Amendment against presidential candidates absent specific legislation from Congress to do so. But they left undisturbed the finding that, you know, we confirmed with our own eyes and by every fact finder that has wrestled with this question, which is that one, January 6th was an insurrection, and two, that Donald Trump is an oath-breaking insurrectionist. And, you know, those facts, which we, which the trial court found, which the Colorado Supreme Court found, which the Secretary of State in Maine found, which the trial court most recently last week in Illinois found, are remain intact and are going to be relevant as Congress and the American public consider accountability for former President Trump and as the annals of history look back in this moment.
I definitely want to touch on those technicalities and, you know, where this leaves us, Donald. But before we get into that, I just want to, our viewers who are not familiar or have maybe not tuned in before, to be reminded that all of your plaintiffs, including Krista, were either Republican or independent. There was not a single Democrat on this team bringing this litigation. Krista, just for our viewers who seem to think this is some kind of disenfranchisement of Republican voters, it's completely the opposite. You are doing this to give Republican voters a valid choice of qualified candidates, and you come from this as a Republican. Can you just tell us a little bit about your background and perspective on this?
Yes. So I've been in politics for, and public policy for the better part of three decades. I worked for two members of Congress. I worked for the Heritage Foundation. I've run for office. I ran for city council a couple of years ago. I've worked with influential think tanks on the right. And I've been a talk show host and TV commentator. So I've been in this for a long time. And so I was proud to represent Republicans who understood the gravity of January 6th, the gravity of having a former president lose an election, refuse to concede, then to foment violence to overturn an election. That's an insurrection. I'm also a big proponent of following the law, of rule of law, and a proponent of taking the words of the Constitution. If and until those words are removed through a formal process, they remain binding. I also want to reiterate that this really was, it was a beautiful bipartisan, a beautiful example of bipartisanship in that most of the litigants were Republicans, including myself, and the lawyer that recruited me, Mario Nicholas, is a former Republican, also somebody who's run for office. And then we also had folks that were on the lawyers that are Democrats. So this was Americans coming together for America. One of the things that angered me so much after the last election, the 2020 election, is to see a president, to see somebody who took an oath of office, violate that oath, and attempt to disenfranchise 80 million of my fellow Americans. It doesn't matter that they're Democrats. It doesn't matter that they voted for Biden. They're my fellow Americans. And it was very important to me that a Republican, four of them, in fact, be on the record as standing up for our fellow Americans.
Your work in that line was heroic, Krista, and I just want to echo what Donald has said as far as we can't overstate the contributions to democracy that you have made as plaintiffs, that your team of litigants, many of which I have gotten to meet, including Mario and Noah, have made here. In spite of this court's ruling, but let's just get into that ruling a little bit. I got to say, as I was reading, it's about the majority ruling, which speaks for all nine justices. Granted, there is a separate opinion written by Justices Sotomayor, Kagan, and Jackson, and another very short one written by Justice Barrett, where they basically say that they don't think that the majority should have gone as far as making more broad conclusions as to how Section 3 should be enforced. Nonetheless, the majority and everybody concurred on the judgment, which was that Colorado's decision should be reversed, that Colorado does not have the authority to ban federal officials from appearing on a state ballot. I gotta say, one word that I came out of reading this ruling with was pretzels. Pretzels. I feel like they were trying to twist themselves into pretzels to find a reason to take this right away from Colorado. Can you give me your thoughts on this, Donald?
I think pretzels is an apt description. You can tell that they all wanted to reach the ultimate goal of leaving former President Trump on the ballot, but couldn't figure out how to get everybody to agree to that conclusion. And, I think the four concurring justices pointed out that the majority overstepped in making a broader ruling than they needed to, which, extended this anti-textual argument that that only Congress has the or that Congress even Congress only has the authority to impose Section 3 if Congress specifically passes legislation. And so, I think it was an attempt. It seems it was an attempt by them to cover as many possibilities as they could so that this issue never came back to the court again. But really, it was a strained writing, one, because I believe it was wrong, and two, because I think it attempted to do too much. It's obvious the court didn't want this case, which is strange because I thought, that's the entire reason for having a Supreme Court is to make the tough decisions. But even then, it seemed like they wanted to avoid the merits, which is the fact that Donald Trump is an oath-breaking insurrectionist, but also try to write this opinion in such a way that it reached issues that weren't even before it. And in so doing, I think failed. In being a legally sound decision that that enforces the 14th Amendment, but two, in cutting off questions that are hard questions that will ultimately come to Congress if Trump prevails in November.
Yeah, it was really almost it ended to me with something that was extremely self-contradictory, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it ended with this statement. I'm just going to pull it up here. Give me one second. About this so-called chaos that this that ruling in favor of your team would have resulted in. Donald, you and I have discussed this so many times that they're avoiding the obvious chaos that it could still result from them not taking this action and applying Donald Trump's disqualification pre him getting possibly elected. But they said this, which I just found so contradictory, granted that they were making this whole argument, it seemed throughout the order, that Congress had to enact legislation to enforce Section 3. They said the disruption would be all the more acute and could nullify the votes of millions and change the election result if Section 3 enforcement were attempted after the nation has voted. Nothing in the Constitution requires that we endure such chaos arriving at any time or different times up to and perhaps beyond the inauguration. I mean, the lack of awareness to me was just breathtaking. Were they not there on January 6th? And are they in fact saying Congress should enforce, but no, really, at no time do we actually want Congress to enforce?
Yeah, I mean, that's the rub. It both fails to acknowledge exactly how we got here, which is that a president tried to incite a violent mob targeted on January 6th to overturn a free and fair election. But also, it reads language into Section 3 that's not there, and tries to both kick the can to Congress without reaching the obvious conclusion, which is that by kicking the can to Congress, you once again put a target on January 6th, which is, to get back to the beginning, how we got here. And so, this is why I think your term of pretzel or my term of strained is accurate. To be honest with you, it reinforces for me that the easiest thing to do, the thing to provide the most clarity, would have been to disqualify Donald Trump. It also would have been consistent with the law and the facts. But there is going to be chaos. There is likely to be chaos, in part because Donald Trump refuses to accept the results of free and fair elections. So the idea that there's going to be more chaos in one situation versus the other is belied by that fact. But also, what Secretary Griswold has repeatedly asked for, what our clients have repeatedly asked for, and what Section 3 ruling in favor of our clients and vindicating Section 3 would have provided is clarity. The clarity that an oath-breaking insurrectionist cannot hold office as president and thus cannot run for president in Colorado and elsewhere. That would have answered these questions and provided the clarity that is certainly lacking in this decision.
You agree, Krista?
I definitely agree. And I'm also, when I read the concurring decisions, I thought it was very important that they acknowledged that the majority was reading something in that was not there, and that Congress has to act. And the interesting thing about Congress is that when they had a chance to act, they didn't. And that Congress is a very partisan entity, in contrast to the effort among the litigants and our lawyers, a mix of Republicans, Democrats, and independents, who were and are concerned about our democracy and making sure that we have elections and that only those who are eligible under the Constitution appear on the ballot. They took it from a bipartisan group, essentially kind of a nonpartisan group, and said the only one that has a responsibility for this section is an entity that is highly partisan, who failed to do their duty in the first place.
Yeah, it really is problematic. And all of it goes back to this notion, which is not in the text of Section 3, or for that matter, in the text of Section 5, which a lot of the opinion refers to, trying to push off this notion that Section 5 says that Congress can enact legislation to enforce other provisions of the 14th Amendment. It does not say that it must. It says that it can. But Section 3 is self-executing. Even those, like you said, Krista, those concurring opinions reiterated that. But this is really problematic, isn't it, to strip states of their right to impose qualifications for federal candidates? They've been doing this for years, haven't they?
Well, I think this is the irony of this opinion. Here is an originalist court that has used state rights as a cudgel in lots of different scenarios, has been viewed as, sort of an advocate for states' rights, but not here, not with respect to Colorado and their ability to run elections. But also, this court has purports in this decision to be giving power or to be recognizing the power of Congress, all the while stripping Congress of power to adjudicate qualifications for President of the United States. And so, again, the analysis is strained because it is both internally inconsistent and inconsistent with with the hallmarks of the Roberts Court over the last several years.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at this in comparison to what was done with Dobbs, you know, just the amount of authority in a case like that given back to the states. And here, when the case is just protecting the country from an insurrectionist instead of stripping half of, you know, the American population of their bodily autonomy, they don't want to do it. It is ironic is maybe a euphemism in this case. But Krista, go ahead. Yes, please.
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to weigh in on that. And I supported the Dobbs decision, but you can't do both. You can't say, well, we're going to be originalists. We're going to look at the law and we're going to apply it as it was written and do it in one case and allow states the freedom then to deal with this issue on their own. And then turn around the next day or a couple of months later and say, well, no, actually, we're not going to be concerned with the actual text of the law of the Constitution. We're going to be focused on outcomes. And because we don't like the outcome here, because it's going to be messy and each state is going to do it different, we're going to say that states don't have that ability. And we're not going to be originalists anymore. We're now going to be outcome oriented and do kind of a, if I should say, a living Constitution approach. And I don't think you can do both. I don't know that you can't be an originalist who also embraces a living constitution. You should be consistent with what there's merits to both of those ways of doing law, but at least be consistent.
Absolutely. And it's wonderful to have your perspective, Krista. We do not often on this program have the perspective of being in support of Dobbs, but it brings out that very clear underlying point that it seems like they're just making decisions on preferences. And in particular, the elephant in the room here is that, you know, three of these justices were appointed by Donald Trump. There is so much concern about the legitimacy of this court, decision doesn't necessarily support that when you have unanimity from the whole court reversing it. But you couple this decision with, you know, their decision to take up the presidential immunity challenge to, put a delay, sanction Donald Trump's delay strategy by delaying his trial for basically this same issue, insurrection-related election interference, trying to, you know, interfere with the will of the voters in that D.C. case by months. It really does seem like this Supreme Court is doing Donald Trump's bidding, at least at this moment. Donald, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, certainly there is concern about the court taking up the immunity case. And even if they rule in, even if they affirm that decision, the process by which they've taken the case up has caused significant delay. And, you know, I think it's another example of potentially the court trying to have its cake and eat it too, right? Trying to present itself as originalist, all the while giving Donald Trump a pass for obvious violations of the Constitution, obvious criminal activity that we've seen. Look, these are smart and creative people. And I think this decision in our case reflects their intellect and creativity being put to use to give cover to the former president in a way that that avoids, getting to the touchier and more important issue of whether Donald Trump is an insurrectionist. Now, leaving that question untouched means that, every fact finder that has addressed the question continues to agree mm-hmm. that Donald Trump is an oath-breaking insurrectionist. But I think, the court is demonstrating that it can and will write decisions that are anti-textual, that allow Donald Trump to avoid accountability, but doing so in a way that gives them some plausible deniability. And I think that's what this decision reflects. And I am concerned that they will go a similar route, even if they reach a different result in the immunity case.
Donald, as you were talking, I was just thinking about how so many of us across the spectrum, this interview today is representative of this, have tried to issue warnings and take preventative measures to save this country from Donald Trump. It is not because we hate the man. It is because we know that he does not regard our Constitution and he threatens to end democracy in America as we know it. From my perspective, I always say to, you know, Trump supporters who unfortunately still believe him in any way to this day, he's going to turn on you one day. That day will come that he will turn on you. So we're not against you. We're not even against him. This accountability in the end is going to be a blessing for everyone. And we're trying to warn you. We're trying to avoid that real bedlam that could still await us if this man is given power again. Krista, what can you share with our viewers just kind of along those lines about this not being a Trump-hating exercise, but a protecting the country and the Constitution exercise?
I don't hate Trump. I can't say that I really hate very many people. I sort of reserve that for people like Putin, for example, the leader of Russia, who's murdering Ukrainians right now to take their territory. But I have to say that I do believe that Donald Trump is a demagogue, and he has used people's fears and hopes and frustrations, and he has used that to boost his own power. He's used it to trick people into thinking that somehow he won the election and that it was stolen from him. He's deluded a lot of really good people. And over the last year or so, and particularly the last month or two, his incendiary rhetoric has gotten even more strident. He's now saying that immigrants poison the blood of the nation. He is saying things that should alarm all of this. I don't believe that another Trump presidency will be the end of the world. We are a resilient, strong country, but it really will put to test our institutions, our trust in each other, and it will not be a good thing. We have to continue to warn people that this person tried to steal an election, tried to disenfranchise millions of people. He will literally throw anybody under the bus to get what he wants, which is power.
Yeah, just to add, this is someone who's suggested that we should cancel the Constitution. So it's not just that he's willing to throw anyone, he's willing to throw any institution, including our founding documents, under a bus in pursuit of power. I've said this to you, and I've said this, pretty much every opportunity that I've had. This is not necessarily about Donald Trump. Obviously he's the person that we sued because that's the moment that we find ourselves in. But ultimately, this is about January 6th and about the endurance of our democracy. Whether we have free and fair elections 50, 100, 150 years from now, whether presidents are allowed to overturn the results of free and fair elections. That is a concern, not just for 2024, but for the elections that my children will vote in, for the elections that my grandchildren will vote in that I may never see. And I think history certainly will record that Donald Trump was an oath-breaking insurrectionist. I think that history will also reflect negatively on this decision and view it as an abdication of responsibility in a moment where the Constitution and the nation demanded it. But we shall see.
I don't think I could have said it any better than you, Donald. I agree. I don't think history is going to look back on this moment favorably. I thank you both so very much for joining me today. I do want to offer either of you, Krista, if you want to take the last word and leave us with any final thoughts.
Well, my final thoughts now are that the enforcing the Constitution, since the court has taken a pass, it falls to Congress, and Congress is unlikely to do so. So now it falls to the voters to see a demagogue for who he really is, somebody who refused to concede, came up with lies, huge lies, deluded a lot of people, pushed those lies until people were willing to take up arms and attack the Capitol to stop the peaceful transfer of power and to disenfranchise millions of Americans. It's up to the people now. I hope they do the right thing.
We the people must do what the Supreme Court justices were not willing to do. Thank you both so much for your heroic work standing up for the Constitution, for leading that trial to victory in Colorado in a case that I absolutely believe should have been affirmed. Thank you both so much, Donald Sherman of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, and their brave plaintiff, Krista Kafer. Thank you for joining us on Lights On.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us for this special episode of Lights On. You can catch all of the episodes of Lights on my YouTube channel, Jessica Denson, and also on the Lights On with Jessica Denson audio podcast, wherever you get your audio podcast. Thanks so much. Continue to let your light shine.